Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. As usual, I'm your host, Cody, and we are continuing October's theme of awesome fantasy sci-fi movies. Up today is a little movie called Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow is a few things. An amazing science fiction action adventure film. To me, it's in the line of it's created to make it look like the old black and white serial movies from back in the day. It's even told kind of like a in the vein of like Indiana Jones, for example, the way they kind of do that. Visually, it's a lot different than that, but aesthetically and in the themes are very similar to what they did with the early the first three. I'd definitely say the first one, but the first three Indiana Jones movies. They're pulp action movies, which means they're it can be a couple different things. But it's a stylized telling of a story, as you could probably one of the best ways of putting it. The story itself is not that deep or whatever. It's not even a new story. It's basically just the way. It must, much like a lot of the old school movies and radio serials and stuff, even some comic books and novels and stuff from the back in the day. They're very highly it's not the story that's embellished on. It's the world and the characters that they look for and they kind of stress and things like that. This movie doesn't really the downfall of this movie is the fact the characters, for the most part, a lot of them know each other, but you get snippets of their backstories and their past together, and so you don't get a full backstory between all of them. It's kind of the interlocking things. It's kind of the story that goes on between the characters that unfolds as the movie does, that has nothing to do with the main plot, but has to do with, obviously, the relationships between the characters. Speaking of characters, so the movie itself was written, directed by Carrie Cameron, who is very unknown for the most part, has only made literally one real movie, which is Sky Captain, The World of Tomorrow. And I'll go over the making of it and kind of the history of it a little bit. Actors in the movie, you have five main actors that you'll know. Number one, playing Sky Captain, is Jude Law. Jude Law, you know, from many things. Jude has been in the, Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. He was in Captain Marvel, earlier this year. He's been in a lot of things. It's so many things. I can't even imagine what's even. It's Jude Law. Everyone knows Jude Law. Been acting in a bunch of different stuff. He's an awesome dude. Awesome actor. You have Angelina Jolie, which I thought I probably should have put that differently. I don't know why she was listed second in that list. It's very bizarre. Or wait, oh, I moved it. My bad. Oh, I closed. Oh, I'm an idiot. That's why I closed Gwyneth Paltrow's page. I knew there was more than just that. Gwyneth Paltrow's second. She plays Penny Parker. Penny Perkins. Sorry, not Penny Parker. Penny Perkins. Penny Parker is from a different set of movies. Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, she's been in a lot of stuff. Most notably, she plays Pepper Potts, which is hilarious. Penny Perkins, Pepper Potts. Anyways, Pepper Potts in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She has been in a ton of things. Shallow Hal, Royal Tenenbaums, Awesome Power, and Goldmember, which is funny because it's a cameo in that one. She was in, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Contagion, a bunch of stuff, man. Sliding Doors, Great Expectations. She was in Seven. Her head was in a box. Spoiler alert, I guess, on that one. A bunch of stuff. She was in Hook. She played young Wendy Darling, if you guys didn't know that. TV wise, I mean, she wasn't in a whole lot of, real anything. She's in 5 episodes of Glee, apparently. I don't know. But it's Gwyneth Paltrow. Everyone knows her. Then you have Angelina Jolie, of course, has done just an ass ton of movies herself. You know, I don't have to explain all who Angelina Jolie is. She plays a character referred to as Frankie, but her name is Francesca Cook. She is the commander of the Royal Navy, as well in this movie. She's in it. She's not in it very long, but she's a pretty pivotal role in it for the most part. Then you have Giovanni Ribisi. Giovanni Ribisi has been in so many things. More recently, he was in Ted 2, opposite, Stuffed Teddy Bear. He's in the Avatar movies, the James Cameron ones, not the Airbender one. He played Phoebe's brother on Friends for a bunch of episodes. He's done a ton of different TV shows. Nothing long form. He's done a few things long form, but mostly he's been, more recently, been in ones and two episodes of stuff. Early in his life, he was on 30 episodes of My Two Dads. He did the new Leave It to Beaver way back in 1985. Anyways, it's Giovanni Ribisi. You know him from different things. He's pretty awesome. You have Michael Gambon. I'm not too sure how to say his last name. Most notably, he is the actor who took over the role of Professor Albus Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies after the passing of the original actor. That movie is way later on, and that's actually pretty much where I know him from, is those. I mean, I've seen a lot of other things he's been in, several other things he's been in, but the Harry Potter ones or the Harry Potter movies are the ones that most everybody's going to know him from. It's got to be the biggest thing. I would say it's the biggest thing. He's in the TV movie for Little Women. Interesting. Or miniseries, to say. Huh. Weird. This is a funny thing that he's in this. He plays Professor Albus Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies, and he's in this movie with Jude Law. Jude Law plays Professor Albus Dumbledore in the Fantastic Beasts series. Which is, I thought was really funny that they were in this. And I don't know if I've commented before to myself, but I was rewatching this the other day. I even said, hey, that's weird. Old Dumbledore and young Dumbledore in the same movie together. Never in the same scenes together. So, I mean, it's fine. They're not going to like time cop each other out of existence. But I think it's just funny that they're many moons ago and way back in 2004. Way back in 2004, they were in a movie together. That same year was the first year he played Albus Dumbledore. It's not like it's oh my God, I haven't seen each other in so long. Or haven't been, you know, they took the, you know, 14 year or 2017 was the first Fantastic Beasts. Yeah. So 13 years to, you know, for one to play the other in a movie, which is really funny. But I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was kind of funny that they were doing that. And the last one is a lesser known actor of them all. This is Bailing, or Bailing. I'm not too sure how to say it. She is a Chinese American actress. Most notably, she was in The Crow. One of my favorites, Three Extremes, which is an anthology movie. She was in Southland Tales. She was in, like I said, The Crow. Crank High Voltage is the second Crank movie. She was a singer, too, right? I think. Yeah, singer. I don't know how to work a computer right now. There we go. And then since well, man, your last big movie. Oh man, was that really her last big movie? Huh. Okay. Yeah. Last big movie was Crank High Voltage in 2009. Everything else has been pretty small movies for the most part. But yeah, I mean, she's a fairly well-known actress. Done a lot of movies in Chinese back in the day. Which Three Extremes is in dub. I watched it dubbed, right? Is Three Extremes in Chinese? No. Was it really? No, hold on. I'll tell you right now. I want to say it was in English. No, it was definitely not in English. I watched the dub then. Yeah. And this was the Three Extremes was the first, right? First of two. Yeah, because that is a sequel. Called Three. No, it is the sequel. Yeah, it's a sequel. So Three Extremes is a sequel to Three, which is an anthology movie. I don't know why I had to say that again. Which is basically three, well, it's in the name of it. It's three different movies directed by three different people that all kind of tie together in a way. Sorry, it's a confusing thing. But they're horror movies. They're like suspense horror movies that came out in 2002 and 2004. Yes, 2004. Oof, God, I should look that up. Anyhow, so that's Bailing. So Sky Captain the World Tomorrow, again, brainchild of Kerry Conran, and actually his brother as well, and his sister worked on it too, but this is the brief history of how it was made. So originally it was supposed to be, a couple things. Originally it was supposed to be a 7-part serialized short films. So 7 short films. That would have been a serial, so, you know, telling one big story. Then it would have been, the way he wanted to make it, and the way he did make it, actually, is it was completely shot on blue screen with CGI backgrounds. And he the short film he made, which has the short title, you know, to follow along with a short movie, is Sky Captain and the Flying Legion in The World of Tomorrow, Chapter 1, The Mechanical Monsters. So that was the name of the short film. He made it. He took him 4 years to make it. He shot it, used his friends as the actors, and then digitized everything in behind him using a old, out-of-date Mac computer. I think it was a 2... EI, I believe. I found it somewhere. But he made this, showed to a couple friends, one of his friends then showed it to a friend of hers, who's a producer that helped find funding and get the movie released. So a couple things. So that's the origins of it. The big thing to know about it is the movie was completely and utterly shot on a blue screen sets. So the only two sets that were built, there was a full set built of the professor's lab / apartment. I think it was actually just a lab. I don't know if it was an apartment or not. And then the other partial set was Dex's lab, I think. I don't remember if I found that one or not. I can't remember what the other one was. But basically, there's only two sets built. One fully built, one was partially built, and then used the blue screen to finish the rest of it. So basically, I'm going to read you not the synopsis. I'll go over the plot a little bit here. But the process of the movie itself. So, the original one, like I said, took 4 years to make the original short film. Then, once they got financing and a distribution deal, later on distributed through Paramount Pictures, the main film with, it says here, and basically, it's touted as having a $70 million budget, but there's been articles with Carey talking about how the movie actually had a $20 million budget, but it doesn't matter. That's an argument for some other people some other time. But so almost 100 digital artists, modelers, animators, and compositors created a multi-layered 2D and 3D backgrounds for the live-action footage, while the entire film was sketched out via hand-drawn storyboards and then recreated as CG animatics. 10 months prior to shooting the live-action scenes, Conran first shot them with stand-ins in Los Angeles, then converted the footage to animatics to show the actors so they could accurately envision the film. Because, again, the entirety of the film is shot on blue screen and then digitized. Everything was then added in CG behind them. So, I mean, you could see, or you can imagine, it's a pretty tough thing to act on because you literally have nothing to work with. So the movie was a box office bomb, as they say. It was air quotes if you guys couldn't see. Only basically grossing $58 million on the $70 million budget. But it got positive reviews. It has, currently it has like a 77% of Rotten Tomatoes. There are critics who obviously didn't like it, but whatever. But it's a landmark film because in 2004, there wasn't a whole lot of people doing full CG movies with real actors in them. And it kind of paved the way for a lot of other movies to be made in the same realm, in the same way. It was one of the first ones. Some of the other notable ones would be Kishern, which is one of my favorite anime adaptations of one of my favorite animes. Immortal with Henry Cavill and a bunch of other people. Sin City in 2005. And obviously with the popularity of movies like 300, which were was another movie that was filmed in the same kind of manner. Yeah, I mean, it was it's a pretty spectacular way of making a movie, especially for a first time director and a creative, because it's a very big undertaking. And I mean, like I said, 10 months previously before filming it, he filmed the whole thing with stand-ins just so the actors could see exactly, not exactly, obviously they didn't render all the special effects, but he gave them an idea with the animatics of what they would be doing so they could react properly to it. So the movie itself is set in a alternate reality or alternate version of 1939. Pre-World War II, post-World War I. The movie opens up with a a Zeppelin named the Hindenburg 3, which then land or not lands, but docks, I could say, moors there itself on top of the Empire State Building, showing you that this version of 1939 is more technologically advanced. And from this scene, you get a couple things. One is you get part of the plot of the beginning, the first third of the movie, the first act, I could say, of the movie. You get introduced to a doctor on the airship named Jorge Vargas. He is traveling on the Zeppelin, the Hindenburg 3, and is looking to have a package of two vials delivered to a Dr. Walter Jennings. Then we jump to Polly Perkins, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who is a reporter for the Chronicle. She gets a message from Dr. Jennings asking her to come to Radio City Music Hall, which they're watching Wizard of Oz, which is kind of plays into the movie itself in a way. It's kind of foreshadowing something in it. But from there, she is. He tells her that he is one of seven scientists that have that were working on a secret project for the last few years, last 20-something years. And he, six of the doctors have disappeared, and he knows who's next, which is him, by the way, if you didn't figure that out. And he basically implores her to, he's trying to get her to expose what's going on, but he's being followed, and he gets very nervous about it and tries to leave. Then the first invasion happens. The invasion is giant mechanized flying robots attack the city. They seem to be indestructible. And then the authorities call in Sky Captain, whose name is Joe Sullivan, played by Jude Law. He is the commander of a private air force known as the Flying Legion, and he flies an aircraft, which is a modified Curtiss P-40 that has a bunch of tricks up its sleeve. And he is an ace pilot and all these fun things. And he comes in, realizes that his guns are not penetrating the armor of these robots, who not only do they fly into the city, but they're several stories tall, very large mechanical machines. So he comes in, he ends up taking one out using a bomb or a mine of some sort that blows off the ankle joint and collapsing one of the robots. He then in the process saves Penny from being killed by this robot, who's really her fault for getting in the way. She's just not getting out of the way. You could definitely get out of the way of these robots, but she's trying to get a story and she's trying to take pictures. So she's getting caught, almost gets crushed by him. But that's kind of the way these stories are told. And she's not like a hapless heroine. She is kind of bumbling and kind of a menace. And it's more of the fact that she's not dumb. She's just very curious and is always trying to get the big story. So she meets Dr. Jennings. He tells her what's going on. She almost gets killed by the giant robot, but, you know, Joe saves her. She notices it's Joe, so she goes to talk to her editor, or calls her editor and says that, hey, actually, he does that before she sees Joe. It doesn't matter. Talks to her editor, played by Michael Gambon, whose character's name is Editor Paley. Morris Paley by the novelization. But then, So they, he goes back, has the robot he destroyed delivered to his base, the base of the Flying Legion, where he meets up with Dex, played by Giovanni Ribisi, who is his tech guy and kind of architect of all of his fun toys and other things. Dex tells him there's this radio signal that he picked up that he believes is coming from the robots. He thinks that's how he's controlled. The whoever is controlling him is controlling these. And Polly shows up and confronts Joe and says that she wants the story and she'll give him information that she has, which is a blueprint that Jennings gave her by accident. He dropped it when on his rush out, but was going to give her. And then tells them that a Dr. Totenkopf is behind the whole thing. And of course, nobody knows who this is. Research is done, found out he's this scientist from World War One who had disappeared in 1919 or something like that. He disappeared. And so they go on investigate. When then Joe and Polly go back to the city where they're going to go and try to find Dr. Jennings. They go to his lab slash, I think it's a slash apartment, but go there. They find out he's been attacked and he dies. But giving Polly the two vials that were given to him and told her that if Totenkopf gets these, the world will end. And so she hides them. You meet Bai Ling's character, who's the mysterious woman, the hench woman, and she beats, well, she doesn't beat, she knocks Joe back 10 feet into a wall and gets away. And then as Joe and Penny head back to his base, they get a call saying that they're, or when they're at back at the base, there's another radio frequency comes in to say they're being attacked. He goes up, starts fighting them off. They have to chase one of them that has the lead robot that has the signal coming from it and then try to track it, which Dex does, but he then gets captured by Bai Ling's character, the mysterious woman. Joe and Penny have to head out to find her. They find out that they're in Nepal. And then, outside of Nepal, technically, and that they go to this mining facility outside of Shangri-La, where they are then told that Totenkopf used the mine to get all these materials he needs. So they go, they find out where he's going to be hiding, where he's at, and it's on this remote island that isn't on any map anywhere. And so they're flying. They start to run out of gas, and so he calls in a favor to his friend Frankie, who is Angelina Jolie's character, who's the commander of the Royal Navy, who's actually an airship, and they use planes that convert into submarine or submersibles that drive underwater, which is the same thing that you get, you know, a little brief thing with Joe's plane that does that when they need to escape from some of the flying bird jet thingies. And so they then go to Totenkopf's island where they want to rescue or at least find about Dex and stop Totenkopf from doing whatever he's doing. And they find out that it's a rocket ship that is going to be essentially like Noah's Ark. It has two of all creatures on the rocket. But the thing is, Totenkopf has come to a realization that humans are destined to destroy each other themselves. So he makes this Noah's Ark rocket and is going to shoot it off into the stars to repopulate another planet. In doing so, when the rocket hits the atmosphere, it will then use its thrusters. And when it does that, the afterburners will ignite the atmosphere and kill everyone on Earth. So they go and they try to stop the rocket, and that's all. I'll leave it at that. I don't ruin the whole thing for you, but visually the movie is amazing, and you got to remember this was made 15 years ago, and it has some of the best CG that even nowadays looks better than a lot of stuff that's out there. It is a fantastic movie. It could have been more. It could have been better, but really it was made by an artist who wanted to make this type of story done this way, and it wasn't out of necessity for a lower budget. He actually had it planned to make it for $3 million, but they gave him 20. So he then, you know, got better actors with Jude Law, Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, Giovanni Ribisi, things like that, people like that, and then made this movie. And it should have been way bigger, but it was ahead of its time. It is a science fiction movie, so it's always going to get, you know, kind of shit on for being ridiculous. But the thought behind it, the premise of the story itself is very poetic for even nowadays. But it was really cool. It was a visually very stunning movie. I loved it. It's one of my favorite of these type of movies. Reason it's on this list. But yeah, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, we were talking about Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. And as usual, at the end of these, when I wrap it up, I always say, let's be awesome.